So the train just suddenly stopped and wasn't moving for a longer time. And we saw through the windows, we looked out, I mean, from this little tiny window, we just saw enormous lines of light, such rows of lights. And it was morning, very early morning, and there was fog, such a slight fog, and we could see those lines of lights and barracks, a lot of barracks there. We had no idea where we actually were. And eventually we heard a lot of shouting, raus, 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 schnell, schnell, schnell. And the doors on all those wagons were suddenly opened, and they just pushed us through. Who was able to move still had to step out from the wagons, and we were put segregated, women in one on one side and men on the other side, in another row, and the others who couldn't actually move anymore, we've seen they were carried out and put on some place out of those two rows which were created there. And the next thing we realized that at the women's side, where I saw still my mother and my sister and my aunt, waving to us, going forward to a person who was somewhere further on, which I couldn't see at the front of this row. And there were the so-called selections, those who were supposed to be left alive and those who were supposed to be going into the camp. So there were already a selection there, which I actually... I didn't know to which side my mother, sister, and aunt was going. I found it out eventually. And then, when the women's row was, finished, we were starting to move forwards to somebody who was in the front of this row, and that was an SS man. And it was, it might have supposed to be this famous Dr. Mengele or whoever he was. And he just was waving, and I was with my father keeping together, and I was only afraid that I was at the time was 21 years old or so, yes. And my father was still looking quite well, so I hoped he wouldn't be selected to the side where I saw they are going all the smallest children and the surviving person. So we were trying to be kept together, and really we went to the living side, so-called. Eventually we found out that we were those who were not going straight into the crematorium or the gas chambers. So I was selected to the site. I suddenly found out myself going with my father into this camp from this railway station, being escorted there. We saw in the distance, because you couldn't see the end of the barracks. It was such a huge place there. But we saw this crematorium, this smoke coming out of the chimney. And while we were passing a place there, which we later found that it was a so-called sauna, the incoming sauna for those people who were just coming from the railway, we saw the women staying there around the entrance into the sauna. We saw it through the fence. We were going on such a way which was already made between both sides we had the camps, and we were still working along the camp. But we saw in this one building, which was this so-called sauna, our women, I mean the women population of our transport staying there, and they were naked and already shaved. All the hair was shaved. So I couldn't recognize one person of the other, but they could recognize us. And I saw suddenly waving somebody to me. It wasn't very far from us. I mean, it was perhaps such 50 meters or something between 50 or 100 meters far. So I then could recognize, although they were looking totally different and naked even, outside staying, the three persons were my sister, and out of the crowd of those people there, that was my mother, my sister, and my aunt. And so that was the last time I've seen my mother and my, no, only my mother, because my sister and my aunt survived that. Then we were actually going further into this camp, and we were put into another such a sauna for men, because we were directed into already a men's camp there. And there we went through the same procedure. We were stripped naked, all our last possession, because still there were some people who had some possessions, still even survived, which survived the ghetto. They had perhaps some little things like a ring, a wedding ring, or something. They were hiding this into the back. They pressed it down some places where they thought they can hide this thing. So, and there we were stripped even for those last things, because we went through a very sorrow search. Yes. And then we were put into a camp where we were so-called the disinfection through the sauna, where you were, with some chemicals we were treated. And because there was on the entry of the sauna was a sign there which was called "Eine Laus, dein Tod," which means one flea or one louse, it's your death. Your death. So they were very trying to be careful with that. So and then we found ourselves in a so-called selection camp again, where we were put in those barracks where there were so many pressed, so many hundreds of people in one barrack pressed in. There were no beds bunks, whatever you would describe some place where you can. There were not even bunks there. So we were actually sleeping, sitting. We had to go first, the first row towards the wall, had to sit down and sitting like that, knees, and then the next row, and so, and that was how we slept for, I think, for 3 nights we were there. And there I was still with my father together, and then the third or the fourth day, there was another selection again there. Where we had to go out, there were again some SS people selecting the younger and the stronger ones on one side and the older to another side, and there I was selected out of the camp, and there was the last time I saw my father in this moment. And the next thing we found out, we were sent into one side camp of Auschwitz. There were about 25 smaller camps around Auschwitz where there were working camps, because the one where the selection was where the gas chambers and the liquidating, there was the central camp, and or many camps there, they were all concentrated there, but then they were in a region of a diameter of about 35 or 40 kilometers, there were several smaller camps, and we were selected into a camp which was called Yavorno, which was in this Polish region of mines, coal mines, between Krakow and Katowice, a town called Yavorno, and so we were chosen to be in a camp which had a population of 3,500 prisoners, and I was supposed to be selected then there to work in a mine, which I was eventually.
Coal mine,
yes. And again, we were there, we were still quite a few surviving men out of our Czech origin population there, and so we tried to keep to be kept together, that we had something common at least, and the language and also our hopes and everything to keep alive, and so we were then starting to work in a mine. And
did you work at the coal face?
No, yes, at the coal face. I personally was the work was in three shifts, so we were there accommodated in such barracks which were already with bunks. There were around always mostly of 200 people in one room, and the bunks were for all three of shifts, so always one shift was either on the move or was working, and one was sleeping there. So you had no your own bunk. You were always trying to sleep on the same bunk because you tried to keep anything you had already acquired, let's say, which was anyway nothing, but you had it underneath of your so-called bunk. But sharing this with two other people usually, because it was in three shifts. So you can say there were about 600 people in this room, but in three shifts. And in the same way, we were escorted every day to the shift into the coal mine, which was we had to march for about 3/4 of an hour to the nearest railway station there, from where we were put again in a wagon, in such a couple wagon. But only for a short railway journey into the mines, because this camp was serving for about three or four mines in Yavorno. And there I was escorted by the SS into the building of the mine. We were going down the lift, and there we lost any SS. The Germans were not coming with us, but we were there supervised and organized by the Kapos, the so-called Kapos, the Lager Kapos. That was a so-called Arbeitskapo, which was coming with us in the mine, because there were other Kapos, which were the barrack Kapo, which was the head of, in charge of the accommodation room and distributing food and so. So there were different Kapos there. And this Arbeitskapo was in charge of all those 200 people, or how many there were on the shifts underground, and there we were working with the Polish miners there together. And I have to now say another story which is very close with it. One of a friend of mine, a Czech fellow, was lucky. He was working, he was put on an all the time night shift, which was actually an enormous advantage for him, because there were also Polish miners on an all-time night shift. So he met the same miner on the working place at the same. We not. We always had somebody else. It was there was totally we didn't know who we are going to work, and the Polish miners, they were not very friendly towards us. They were actually also living under occupation, but they were still so much better off than we were, and so they were not, under normal conditions they wouldn't help us, they would actually still even taking from us the last thing which we would be able to lose. But why I'm mentioning this friend of mine, he was the only one who actually befriended one miner there, one Polish miner, who was really out of hundreds of thousands which they were working in those mines. And he was lucky. This man was willing to send a letter to his girlfriend to Prague, and she was actually still in Prague because she was she had a German mother, so she was in Prague. So he knew that she might get the letter, and she might then, through this miner again, sent him either some life signs that she's alive, and or perhaps even some food. And that's what she did. And this miner was always bringing him on this shift and down a piece of bread or something, whatever it was. And that kept him much stronger than we were, because with this amount of food which we were getting from Germans for the work, which we was so small that we couldn't actually, nobody could normally survive. There were people actually, we were always carrying two or three people from the shift back into the camp who couldn't anymore. They were so exhausted after the shift that they couldn't walk anymore.
Were you just receiving bread?
We were receiving bread. We were receiving one soup, so-called soup, such a water soup with some, potato peelings in it. We mostly had the potato and some potatoes inside and some vegetable. And so. And then sometimes a piece of sausage, so-called sausage. But that was all. And sometimes something else, it was a piece of cheese, so-called cheese or whatever it was. But that was a so-called working ration. That wasn't a ration which you would get normally in a concentration camp. It was because you were working in a mine.
How were you able personally to cope with the hard work?
Well, I was a very strong physically statue. I mean, I was quite coping with it, but I was feeling that I was getting weaker and weaker all the time. I couldn't imagine how long I would survive with that. But eventually, you have to remember that it was already 1945, it was the year 45, and the Germans saw they were on the retreat. We knew a lot about it. We just heard a tiny little bit of things which were transmitted by mouth from, let's say, from this Polish miner to this friend of mine, or through other ways, where the front was, or what is happening in the world. And it was a daily survival only to live another day to be able. So we were, for example, allowed to carry back into the camp. That was a concession which was made to the capo, to carry the soup from the Polish miners, which they were not eating because they had the better food from home. So we were carrying home such a container of soup out of the kitchen, out of the mine's kitchen, and the capo then was distributing to his few people who he want to give another portion of soup, which meant either another day to survive or not. So this soup was then distributed, he distributed this on his own benevolence to those people he wanted to give. And so that was the way how to survive a day. And at that time the Germans needed some entertainment also in their camps, when they knew there's something going wrong with them. So they arranged in the camp such a group which was supposed to entertain them. And I could think a little bit then, so I thought I will try to survive by trying to get another soup or another piece of bread at the time. And so I said I will sing. So I was amongst about 25 people who were then once a fortnight had to entertain the SS inside the camp one evening. And I had a soup, and that was the way which kept me going from day to day. But I was getting weaker and weaker. It was terrible. I had also an incident, an accident. I was working with a fellow Czech prisoner on a transport of. We were building a new shaft, a new gallery. That's right. And we were transporting cement and sand and wood towards the front of the face, and. He was doing this towing with the winch, and he mishandled it somehow, and I had my leg between two wagons there, I mean those little wagons there, and so it squeezed my leg, and I was terribly, it was terribly hurting. I hardly reached the camp back walking, and then I had to, the next day I had to report for some help, some medical help, but to report for medical help in this camp was your death under normal conditions. If you couldn't report in the morning for work, so you either were in reporting for some medical help in the so-called hospital there, or you were unable to stand up anymore from your bed, and they found you because outside they counted every morning, every day before you were counted, all the population were counted in the camp. And so we, I had to go into this Krankenbau, so called, it was called, and I reported, I did ask the doctor there, and he was luckily a Czech doctor there. He knew my father from Prague. And he helped me, he gave me something, and he hided me in his personal accommodation in this Krankenhaus, because once a week a lorry came into this camp, or two lorries, depends how many people died or were not able anymore to work, and they transported them back to Auschwitz to be gassed, and they brought new people there. So if I would be a normal patient in this at the time this transport would take place, I would be loaded on the lorry and I wouldn't be there. So he kept me till I was able again to walk, and then after I was again, after I think a week, it wasn't broken, but it was just heavily, I don't know what at the time happened to that. And so I was back again on my daily work, and then suddenly one day, I mean, I'm just cutting it short because there were so many things happened in between. One day we were going on our shift, and we were in this wagon. That was the first and the last time I experienced something like that. We were in this wagon on the journey from our camp into the into the mine. The railway, the train stopped, and we heard a bombardment somewhere away. We had airplanes, and then the train moved further. We arrived in the mine. We were taken down again the mine, and then in the middle of the shift, they stopped furthering coal and the material which came down, and we heard such boom boom boom, which wasn't the boom boom which was normally when they were exploding for coal, and so we knew something was happening. Then they started again in the at the end of our shift. We were furthered up again to the transport back, and we arrived in the camp back in the camp. In the middle of the camp, where the central building was totally shattered after a bomb hit the central building, where the kitchen was, and the Kleiderkammer, so called, and the organization of the camp there. And immediately, that was on around the 15th of January, 1945, in the middle of January. Big winter already there in Poland, snow everywhere. So and there was a panic even amongst the German, the SS, because it was the first confrontation with the front or something they had actually. And they immediately started to organize somehow the evacuation of the camp. The commander must have said to them, look, you try to build some slates, is it called a slate, yes, for transporting things on snow.
Slates.
And out of wood, they made such very simple slates in order to load their own German SS possessions they had, because they had only one or two or three vehicles of their own. They had one horse, with one horse sleigh, to pull to the sleigh, yes. And we were told to yes, there was a lot of food also lying around how the building was hit, and the storeroom was damaged, and or some food was thrown out, and everybody was trying to catch something there. But it was a matter of hours, really. It was so fast. So we just had to take whatever we could, for example, which we had for covering at night, some blankets, very primitive blanket. That was the only thing we could wear on top of our normal, because in order to keep warm in this winter there, it was so terrible that we actually were using the bags from cement